Welcome to the Power Hour. I'm Adrienne Herbert, wellness coach, international speaker, and author. Each week, I speak to a variety of guests, from business founders to Olympic athletes, leading coaches, change makers, and innovators, to find out their daily habits, their rules to live by, and what motivates them to get up out of bed each day. Personally, I am on a mission to encourage, motivate, and inspire, so I hope that the Power Hour will help you to achieve your personal and professional goals. Welcome back to the Power Hour podcast. Today is a special episode in partnership with Lingo, and I'm joined by Lingo's global nutritionist, Pam Nisevich-Bede. Pam, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited for this conversation.
Oh my gosh, me too. And for the listeners, I suppose a bit of context. Pam specializes in sports dietetics. She is an endurance runner, and she has spent years helping clients and athletes to achieve their goals through better nutrition. So today we are going to be talking to Pam. Pam's going to be answering all of my questions, and we're going to be discussing glucose and the benefits of monitoring glucose as it relates to metabolic health. So again, a bit more context. I first started learning about glucose monitoring last year in November, and that's when I first wore a Lingo CGM device for the first time. Now, as someone who absolutely loves data, like I love data, I love metrics, I love tracking, I love being able to see that, I have found this absolutely fascinating. And more importantly, I've actually found that seeing my own data has really been a catalyst for some behavior change, some lifestyle change, to improve my health, my energy, and most of all, my sleep. So loads of questions, but before we get into all of it, for anyone listening to this, Pam, who doesn't know what a CGM device is, maybe they've seen one, but they don't really know what it is, could you explain what the Lingo CGM monitor, what the biosensor is?
Certainly.
And how it works?
Certainly. So Lingo on its own is this pioneering health biowearable, and it combines a CGM, which is, it stands for a continuous glucose monitor, and that continuous glucose monitor, which I'll explain, then translates data and speaks to an app on your smartphone. So what a CGM does is it continuously measures your glucose, and it measures it in the interstitial fluid. And interstitial fluid can then be correlated with what your glucose is doing in your blood. So basically, it's taking that data, it's communicating from this biosensor, this small puck that you wear on the back of your arm, and you wear it continuously. With Lingo, you wear it for 14 days. And then it's continuously paired to your smartphone, and data is being streamed. And then that data is being kind of compiled and translated so that then you see your glucose levels and your insights in real time in the palm of your hand.
Yeah. And even if you haven't seen it, it might sound confusing, but it's actually so seamless and simple. So once I put the biosensor on, as you said, you kind of just, there's an applicator and it kind of just goes straight onto the back of your arm. You hold your phone next to it, it syncs with it. And as you said, within literally 5 minutes, you're able to see the data. Obviously, there's so much more in the app as well, but it's a really seamless thing. You know, it's like super simple. And I think we kind of take for granted, don't we, like how amazing the kind of health technology, the innovation that we've seen in the last few years is so incredible. And it's so for the consumer, for me, it's like so easy. I just literally put it on and that's it. You know, it's easy.
Right. And I feel like glucose is this metric that's very, very helpful and easy to use, because as a sports dietitian, I have a lot of metrics at my disposal. And as an athlete, you have a lot of metrics too. But there's so many trackers that you're like, What am I exactly going to do with that data, right? So this, I feel like, is this kind of peek behind the scenes of really what is going on with your energy levels, your metabolic health, et cetera, and you can fine tune it and tweak it in a way that's personalized for you.
And so years ago, or like typically, people might have seen these devices worn by people with diabetes. And so now, as we've discussed with modern health technology, this kind of innovation and improving, it's actually now available for athletes, for, you know, proactive health conscious people, but for anyone essentially who wants to learn more about their own body and their metabolic health. So if someone was to ask you, Pam, okay, someone like myself, you know, do I need to wear a CGM? Like, what are the benefits of me doing that? What are the kind of, yeah, I guess, what are the key benefits to someone like me saying, yes, I'm going to wear a Lingo CGM for the next few weeks?
Yeah, it's a fair question. And I'll back up with saying, I started my career in nutrition in type 1 diabetes, working with kids. And when you work in diabetes, right, you've got a lot of different fluctuation in glucose and you're matching it up with different medications, et cetera. So I had this mindset before CGMs came to life that if you weren't working in diabetes, if you didn't have diabetes, your glucose was pretty stable, right? And I almost envisioned it like a straight line, right? Because we only have, when you're using certain glucose measurements, you only have snapshots in time, right? So you just have one or two values across your day. So I envisioned it as a very straight line of glucose. And then I started wearing a CGM. And I also started looking at the data as CGMs became more available for research and just different usage occasions. And I realized that glucose ebbs and flows a lot during the day. And that's perfectly normal. But what we are finding is when our glucose is ebbing and flowing, but very dramatically, so spiking and valleying, there's a direct link to how we're feeling. And then also there's links to what does our long-term outlook look like, right? We just published a paper in Metabolism that looked at postprandial hyperglycemia, which basically is elevated glucose after a meal. And what are the links to different health outcomes? So we found that there are links to, increased risk, unfortunately, for different chronic diseases like cardiovascular disease. But in the short term, it's even increased poor mood, poor focus, poor energy, more hunger, right? Things that we can definitely put a finger on that we're like, you know what, I would like to fix that. And by wearing a CGM, by wearing a Lingo in my own experience, I've finally been able to say, okay, I'm feeling like X, and this is why, what's happening, right? So I don't feel well after I eat a certain food. And then I look at my glucose data and realize I have a crazy spike and then a crash, which is why I need a nap, right? But when I, when I have that data and I can play detective, then I can change my own habits and know what is working for me, right? So there's a lot of eye-opening, like aha moments when you start to use a CGM of saying like, I thought this food worked, and I was told this food would work for my health, but I realized it's not the best fit for me, maybe that day or in the manner in which I ate it or in the portion, et cetera. So I can just fine tune it.
Yes. And oh my gosh, I've got so many questions related to that kind of personalization piece. And I suppose the comparison of looking at how your body responds to one food, and it's so different, of course, to somebody else's, because we're all so different. And I think that's why personalization is just so, so valuable and almost actually essential when we're trying to, improve our health. So you mentioned then that glucose spiking up and down is totally normal. However, we also know that, I suppose, to feel, I guess, to have sustained energy throughout the day, to avoid, as you said, those kind of the crashes. I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that feeling when you feel the boost of energy after a meal and then the drop, the crash, the kind of feeling of fatigue, like you said, being like, oh my gosh, it's maybe 3 PM and you're yawning, trying to like look alert in a meeting at work. So what's the difference? If your diet is causing your spikes to go up and down, dramatic, like peaks and troughs, versus a kind of more, I guess, like rolling hills, like smaller spikes, lesser dips, what would we expect to be the benefit of that? Like why, for example, are we trying to avoid the big spike and the big crash?
Sure. So what's happening behind the scenes is it has a lot to do with the meal makeup, the meal timing, and how fast those nutrients are absorbed, right? So when nutrients are leaving the your digestive system, primarily carbohydrates and sugars, and they're leaving very quickly, they're hitting the glucose, they're hitting your bloodstream quite quickly. And it's more than the bloodstream or the organs or your body really needs at that time. So then what happens is insulin comes in because your body likes to stay at a certain level of glucose control. And insulin is coming in and it is shuttling that glucose to the cells and the, your different organs, your muscles, et cetera, where it's needed for energy, right? So insulin's taking action, it's transporting glucose. What is not needed right then is stored for later use, mostly sometimes in the form of glycogen, eventually as fat. But we don't want to have this great influx of glucose and then this great influx of insulin. It's just not optimal for metabolic health, right? So then there's a link to eventual metabolic syndrome and just poor health in general. So when we can kind of prevent that influx from happening, that is a good thing. Also, when that insulin comes to play And if it's too much glucose and too much insulin, that's when you get this spike. And then you get that eventual crash, right? Because insulin has deposited a lot of that glucose and it's not available for energy. And thus you're low energy, you're low glucose, you're not feeling well, etc. And that crash can be pretty dramatic as well. Conversely, if you eat a meal that maybe it's not as high in carbohydrate, maybe it's not as high in these added sugars, or maybe you just had your vegetables first, your protein first, your fat first, and those naturally slow down digestion, they kind of blunt that response, then you're going to get this glucose increase, because naturally, anytime you have, especially, again, the carbohydrates, you're going to get a glucose increase, but it's not going to be so dramatic. It's going to be a slower approach. It's going to be a steadier type of energy, and that's what we want to see. So you're still, again, going to see a glucose increase, because naturally, that's what happens in our body, but it's not as significant, not as dramatic.
Yes, and I think this is the key thing, isn't it? Because it's not like, for example, a specific diet that says eat these kind of foods, exclude these kind of foods. You know, it's not a diet, and I think that's something that I wanted to really be clear about, is that Lingo isn't a diet. But when you open the app, because we've talked about the biosensor and the CGM, mm-hmm. but when you're using the app, there's also so much information in there. There's kind of prompts and cues and things that kind of guide you to say, okay, you know, educates you actually throughout the days when you're using it. And I think anecdotally, a really great example that I have of this is that I'll say I have a big appetite. You know, I'm someone who's very active. I'm a runner like yourself, and I have a big appetite. So I eat big portions, and I love pasta and I love rice and I love all of that stuff. Rice for me is the thing that tends to typically give me like this crazy spike that lasts for a long time. Pasta, you know, spikes a little bit. But when I think it was maybe like the fifth or sixth day that I was wearing my Lingo and we went out for dinner. Now, I have a question for you about the ordering thing. So throughout in the app, one of the things it talks about in the fundamentals is about, you know, prioritizing protein and going for greens, but also the order in which we consume food. So we're in an Italian restaurant and I ordered a starter, which was like roasted vegetables. And then I ordered my main, which is this big bowl of spaghetti. And then I think I even had a glass of wine. And that night, I think because I was out, I didn't really like look at the data until later on. And when I looked at it, I was like, this can't be right. Maybe it's not working because it didn't really spike at all. And then I thought back to obviously the whole food ordering thing and the starter. Yes, it was roasted vegetables, but there was kind of a bit of space between eating the starter and the main. Whereas obviously at home, I just, you know, everything goes on the table. We just eat dinner together. Whereas because we had this kind of pause in between, there really was like no spike at all. And so I guess firstly, my question was, yeah, kind of what's going on there, like having the vegetables first. But the second part of this long-winded question is that timing gap between the starter and the main, is that what had the impact? Or is it just that simply ordering the food that I had, you know, roasted vegetables first, then a bowl of spaghetti?
I think it's both, because I've had a similar situation eating Greek food in which it's a lot of courses, a lot of carbohydrates when you thought about it in totality, but it was a kind of a prolonged meal, right? And you had those starters, you had time to digest, and especially like with that veggie starter, you've got time for the fiber to kind of, you know, come into play. You know, there's a thought that it coats the stomach, but what it's really doing is kind of like slowing down gastric emptying so that the carbohydrates, when you introduce them, or the sugars, they're not going to, you know, hit and be absorbed as quickly. So I think it's both. And I think it goes back to, you know, the data that shows chew your food, take your time, right? So the things our mom told us to do and like, you know, don't eat so fast. Like there's actually some science there. But I think it's twofold. It's what you eat, how you eat it, right? And then, you know, we get into nutrient timing. But also I think sometimes when we're eating out, there's more fat added to the meal than we realize, which is probably why a lot of starters or vegetables taste better when we're eating out. And then there's salt as well.
Yeah, lots of olive oil.
Yes. So that fat is also helping, you know, the fat, the protein, the fibers, the vegetables are helping slow down digestion. And that in concert is helping with our glucose response.
Yeah, it's a whole education. And as I said, I found the whole thing fascinating. And I definitely, you know, moving on to the comparison piece around why personalization is so important is because, as I said, you know, the white rice thing, you know, I have this big glucose spike. It doesn't mean I'm never going to eat white rice. You know, I love rice. So I might have, you know, like I said, a big bowl of rocket and spinach and whatever first, or sometimes I'm just going to have the meal, but I'm aware of it now. And I'm like, oh, okay, like this is something that really spikes my glucose. And especially if I'm going to say, for example, if I want to feel like I know within my schedule, obviously different days require different things. So if I know I've got a really early start one day, I'm going to be up early, you know, exercise and then leave the house, and maybe I'm going to be presenting, you know, on stage, or maybe I'm going to be doing an event or recording something. If I just want to feel really focused and sharp and awake, then for me, I just don't, the night before, like I feel like now with this new awareness, I would eat maybe a bit earlier. I might eat something different. I basically wouldn't have like 8:30, you know, like a big bowl of rice, because I know that it's going to impact my glucose, not just straight after, but actually throughout the night and throughout the evening. Whereas for my husband, for example, his, you know, response to that is completely fine, and he responds differently to different things. So I guess, yeah, how important is the personalization piece? How important is it as well for people to not compare their own data to someone else's, especially that male-female dynamic, because we know that our bodies are very, very different?
Yeah, it's a good question. Like, I want everyone to have their own data in hand and use that as their North Star, right? We have generalized research that says, you brought up a good example, like close the kitchen early, right? Because when we eat very close to bedtime, we get this, you know, depending on what we're eating, right? It's not a very restful sleep. It's a disrupted sleep, especially, you know, as our bodies are working to digest, but then also we've got this glucose ebb and flow. And you noted like your husband isn't as, you know, as sensitive to that, but you are, right? So like you do you sort of thing, right? And then also scientific data to me is so interesting, especially nutrition data. Nutrition data is really hard to do well, right? And so I always look at data for what the significant was, but what did the outliers show, right? Should we be looking at the outliers? Because that could be a new avenue for research, right? So basically what I'm saying is like, we're all responding differently to our day. So when you have your own personalized data in hand, I would use that first and understand like this is what's working for me and own it. And then, you know, men and women do, especially as we age, we do metabolize fuel differently. Our nutrition needs do change. And of course, we all understand like a lot of the research we have in hand is very male dominated research, and more is coming out in females. But our carbohydrate metabolism definitely changes as we age, specifically to females. The way we are more sensitive to carbohydrates and sugars, et cetera, the way we need more protein as we age across both genders. So metabolism does change, it does shift. And by understanding what your metabolic health looks like in terms of glucose and in the palm of your hand, you can be very proactive as far as your health and what kind of foods, what kind of activities, what kind of lifestyle is going to work better for you.
Yes. So I mentioned at the start that one of the changes that I really, you know, was a catalyst for me was sleep. And so that's a good example, you know, eating earlier and being much more aware of, because I'm an early riser. So, you know, for me, it's like I need to go to bed early because I know I'm going to get up early. So that was one of the big changes. And then another one as a runner, and this will be relevant for any other runners listening or any other athletes or people training, was that I was someone who I feel like, maybe if I was training for last year when I was training for an endurance race, I would go out and do my race, but just like my run, but just like most people, I have other things to do in my day. You know, I have kids, I have work, you know what it's like, you have to fit in those training runs. So sometimes I might come in from a run, maybe it's a 75 minute run, 90 minute run. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm just going to faff about on my phone, on Strava. I'm going to look at this data. Then I'm going to quickly have a shower. Then, oh gosh, it's already time to do the school run. I need to quickly go and get my son from school. Then I'm going to get back and make the dinner. So I might not actually have refueled after exercise, not intentionally. Like, I'm not thinking I'm going to fast. I'm just, you know, this busyness of life. Yeah. And before wearing my Lingo, I don't think I realized the impact that was having on my energy and my glucose. But when I did that wearing the device, I saw my glucose like slowly just declining, 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 plummeting so low. And then I was realizing, oh my gosh, not only is that obviously not great because I'm not going to feel great, but also in terms of recovery and optimizing my body to then be able to run again, you know, maybe the next day or 2 days later, that was such a big like aha moment for me that I was like, now, even if it's just literally having you know, grabbing a banana and having 2 spoons of almond butter, or, you know, having a shake ready in the fridge so that I can drink it in the, you know, on the way to pick up the kids. It's just a huge change. So now after exercise, after running, after workout, I fuel straight away. And it doesn't spike the glucose, but it just kind of, yeah, prevents that dip. So I think, yeah, another huge change for me. But for a lot of, you know, people who in the fitness industry, there's so much changing information about fasting, fasted training. Should we not? So I guess my first question is about, yeah, the refueling, like how we all hear it. Yeah, refuel after the run and people go, okay, how really important is that? And then my second question, which I'll come to, is more about people who want to train fasted in the morning.
So let's hit that recovery first. So I use CGM across a lot of different populations. And when I'm working with an athlete, I'm working either with an Olympian or a pro or an elite. That's kind of where my specialty is, and it's endurance. And what's really helpful about CGM is addressing low energy availability, which is kind of what you're saying in we forget to refuel. And it's not always purposeful, right? Sometimes it is purposeful, but sometimes we're just really busy, right? And you see this actually with a lot of like younger and emerging athletes, because they're just so busy. And then also your day gets away from you and you forget to kind of plan through your nutrition. And what is happening when that glucose is dipping really low is it's not supporting recovery, right? It's not supporting muscle replenishment, muscle recovery, muscle repair, and it's not stocking your fuel tank for whatever the next workout is, right? So whether that workout's in the afternoon, whether that workout is running to pick up your kids from the bus stop, or whether that workout is a long run the next morning, right? You're not putting fuel back in the tank. And why you're seeing not as much of a spike after a workout, when you do put fuel back in the tank, is because your body is primed to replenish, right? Your body is primed for you to add fuel in to replace some of what you burnt off, but also to utilize that for getting ready for tomorrow and repairing what you've just done. And by repairing what you've just done, you can optimize and improve your performance, right? We don't want to always be breaking down. We want to optimize and get ready for you know, better. So that's what's happening there. And I once asked one of the leaders in kind of muscle protein resynthesis, recovery, et cetera. I said, if I have a really light workout, do I really need to recover? Like, it feels like, am I undoing my workout as far as calorie load goes? Like, is it really important? And he kind of helped me understand that. If I, let's say I'm running and I burn, I'm going to make this up, I burn 300 calories. And I added, you know, energy in afterwards. And let's say it was 300 calories. The next time I go out, I'm going to be better equipped to handle that, right? Whether that's burning off 300 calories, 400, et cetera, or whatever your mile looks like, or miles, I should say. But let's say I skipped that, right? So I skipped that. I saved 300 calories. One could argue if you want to count calories, which I don't necessarily want to do. But maybe the next time I go out, I'm so fatigued, I can't even do the workout, right? And these are extremes. But by simply adding in a small bit of fuel after a light workout, right? This is a light workout. I am better equipped to handle whatever I'm going to ask of my body the next time, right? So I don't want you to discount the need for recovery after a workout, even if you're like, you know, I've done harder workouts than that, and I don't know if I really need to recover, right? And how I've been looking at recovery lately is the main nutrient that I consistently see athletes not getting enough of and women not getting enough of, whether they're very athletically inclined or not, is protein, right? And I'm not seeing a detriment of adding in protein after a workout or adding it in throughout the day, right? Do I need you to carb load after a long run? No, but I'd really need you to add in more protein. And how much do I need you to add in? I need at least 15 grams. I would prefer if you grabbed 30 grams, because we need to get in enough of the amino acid leucine to jumpstart muscle protein resynthesis, right? And generally, I find that if you're adding in 30 grams, and a lot of protein shakes are 30 grams, you're hitting a sweet spot and you're not overdoing it. So for, I think, every athlete I work with, because most of them are all falling short on protein, I feel like I'm a broken record as far as we need to add more protein. We need to add in a protein shake. We need to add in whatever. And I say protein shakes because no one really looks forward to like a steak the moment they walk in the door from like a really taxing run, right? Some people do, but for most of us, we need rehydration and we need protein, and a shake, smoothie, etc. will help. So that's kind of where my mind is on as far as recovery goes. And I've already forgotten your second question. because I just kept...
Well, no, it's okay. There was a lot in there. The second part of this question was to do with fasting and the fact that for some people, if they train early, as I said, I get up early. Sometimes I get up at, you know, typically before 6, 5:45. And if it's a day when I'm working out in the morning, I'm not going to make eggs before I do a workout.
Right.
So yeah, that kind of debate goes on about should we fast, especially for women as well. Like, should we be training fasted or not?
I had this question just yesterday from a friend and she said, should I train fasted? And I said, depends what your goal is. Right. So if your goal is I want to crank through a really hard workout and it's going to be hard and it's going to go for a long period of time, I do not want you to hit that workout fasted. I just don't think you're going to have enough fuel in the tank. So what I want you to do is time your nutrients so that your glucose goes up, it naturally comes down, and then when it steadies, you hit that workout. And that time, that window looks like at least 90 minutes, preferably 2 hours, right? And so think through your day and see if you can back up the clock. So if I'm running a marathon, I'm going to get up pretty early. I'm going to fuel before I get to the starting line. Or maybe I'm going to get up early. I'm going to go back to sleep. And then I'm going to get up, you know, and get ready for my day. But there's kind of this window of time where you want to allow your glucose to go up, come back down, steady, and then you go. Now, a lot of us don't have that kind of time. So instead, what I recommend is instead of having this glucose rising and then starting to crash, just as you're trying to get your fuel on board, right? You're trying to tap into that. Don't eat before a workout. When you get to the workout, as you're actively warming up, add in some carbohydrate. So that for some people, that's gel, that's a sports drink, that's a gummy chew, whatever kind of is your go-to. Because when we are working out and we're actively working out, we have a different transporter, a GLUT4 transporter that's going to uptake that energy. And so we're not going to have the same insulin response that we would have when we're trying to digest a meal. And so that way you're going to have fuel on board, but it's just going to be available for you to spend during that workout because you're going to need that energy. Mm. Now, let's say you're still on that question of fasted versus fueled and the workout's very light and your goal is also steady energy, maybe a bit of weight loss, et cetera. You're going to be okay if you don't eat before the workout, right? I used to think no matter what, grab some fuel on your way out the door, you know, don't ever go into a workout fasted. I don't believe that anymore. If you're aiming for very high performance and we're talking podiums and Olympic times, I would really prefer no one work out fasted. But most of us are not, unfortunately, going for the podium, right? We're looking for metabolic health, maybe some weight loss, maybe just, you know, I don't know, burning off fuel, et cetera. And so the data is showing that creating that deficit during that fasted workout is helpful for maintaining a caloric deficit during the day. And that's helpful for our metabolic health and our weight loss if that's a goal. So in that regard, my friend who I said, what's your goal? And she's like, well, better metabolic health, but also weight loss. And I said, there's no reason why you can't run 1 mile fasted.
Yeah. Great. Well, thank you. I think that's really, really useful because as you said, I'm certainly not training for any Olympics. And typically if I'm doing like 30 minutes of Pilates, I'm like, you know what? I'm good. And then the kids wake up and we can have breakfast together and it's, you know, it's not that deep.
I will add just one more thing in that over 50% of athletes show up dehydrated. Right. And so I do want to make sure whether you're fasted, fueled, et cetera, that you are paying attention to hydration. Because if you're dehydrated and you're fasted and maybe you're tired as well, that's going to be a really rough workout. So if you can do one thing, let's just make sure we're trying to optimize hydration because we are, you know, our respiratory rate is, you know, spilling off some hydration as we sleep. So we want to add some back in before we go into that morning workout.
Yes. Okay, great. And also before we have the caffeine, right? Like the water first, hydrate and then caffeinate.
Yes.
Okay. So we have mentioned this term, metabolic health, and I'm sitting here going, yes, yes, yes. But if someone's listening thinking, hey, what is metabolic health? Could you give us a definition, I suppose? How would you define what metabolic health is?
Yes. So there's a lot. So metabolic health basically encompasses all those biochemical processes in the body and how your body is responding to them. And then also it's your lab panel, right? Your triglycerides, your lipid health, your weight, your body composition, et cetera. All that is supporting your metabolism sometimes as we, you know, generically summarize this, but it's this whole, you know, whole processes of how is your body utilizing the fuel, and also how are those enzymatic processes going, those biochemical processes going throughout your body, and how do we fine tune those? It's very, very complex. Metabolic health is very, very complex. But what we, you know, the opposite of metabolic health in my mind is this metabolic syndrome. And what is metabolic syndrome? It's, you know, this whole host of poor lipids, so poor heart health, poor waist circumference, you know, it can be obesity, hypertension, et cetera. So think of the kind of the, you know, the opposite is just this poor health and needing to fine tune our diet, needing to fine tune physical activity, probably losing weight, improving our glucose, our triglycerides, our heart health. And so they're, you know, kind of polar opposite. But a lot of what we're trying to do at Lingo behind educating individuals to eat better, move more, you know, sleep better, improve mood, et cetera. This, you could argue it's a holistic approach, but really we're trying to help with metabolic health.
And it is that kind of overall, like you say, that kind of holistic picture of how you feel and how you sleep and how much. I always talk about energy, you know, I talk about energy so much. And I think it's because ultimately, I think most people, they understand what their energy feels like. For example, if you say to someone when you wake up in the morning, do you feel high energy or low energy? Or, you know, in the afternoon, you know, people can kind of go, actually, yeah, like some people, it's quite funny, but they're obviously living in the modern world and we're busy and we're stressed out. And people will say to me, Adrienne, I haven't felt high energy since I was 12 years old. So yes. The idea of, you know, it's like the idea of actually having high energy without, you know, caffeine or whatever. I think most people probably want that. And most people probably want to be able to focus, to concentrate, and to just, yeah, have a stable mood and be able to optimize their energy throughout the day. And I really feel like Lingo is such a, as I say, like having that hyper personalization, being able to also, I'll be honest, I feel like it gives you kind of an accountability and an awareness piece because you're seeing the data. So as much as, you know, I think there's a lot of research that supports actually when it comes to seeing data around, for example, how many steps we take or how many minutes we sleep, or as soon as we are aware that we're being observed or tracked, even just by ourselves, we modify and we change our behavior. So we might be less likely to go, you know, back, as you said, at 9 p.m. and think, oh, you know what, I'm a bit bored. Oh, I'm just going to, you know, have a rum. Oh, I'm just going to have a biscuit. I'm having, you know, because it's, you're like, oh, that's going to, you know, and it's not to say that, you know, oh my gosh, demonizing having one biscuit or having a snack. Of course, we have to live our lives. Trust me. Like I said, if I show you my weekend, we're going to have, you know, wine and snacks. Okay, cool. Live your life. But I do think that as soon as you see that data, it changes behavior, it modifies, and you know, if you want to feel good and you're wearing it and you've bought it to try and optimize your health, seeing that data really does drive change.
It does. And we see that when individuals across research, you know, that the Hawthorne effect, when people know they're being watched, tracked, et cetera, like they do change behavior, right? It's also that placebo effect. But when you look at the data on CGM and you're not blinded to that data, the improvements people make in their glucose control are pretty quick, right? Because we always get that question, like, how long do you have to wear this? And, you know, should I think through like months and months of wear? And I'm sure marketing would say one thing, but I would say like, you can change your behavior very, very quickly. But what you want to do is continue to fine tune it over time and make that lasting and sustainable, right? And going back to your energy, a lot of us think like, you know, I feel like I'm doing pretty good. I feel like my energy is great, right? But then when you have data in hand and you start to manipulate your intake and your lifestyle, et cetera, you're like, oh, wow. Like I thought I was doing great, but now I'm doing better, right? It's a lot like nutritional recovery after a workout. You think you're doing okay, but then when you add in protein or maybe your favorite supplement or whatever, and you're like, that's what recovery feels like. And then when you stop it, you're like, oh, that was a difference, right? So fine tuning that metabolic health, fine tuning your diet, your lifestyle, et cetera. Once you recognize the feeling, like you know, then you can stick with it, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned then around like the time frame. And I think that's important to talk about because some people have asked me, they've said, oh, you know, this looks really great. I want to get it. And then they say, oh, but next week next week I'm on holiday, yeah. So I'm not going to wear it then. Or actually, yeah, next week it's Easter, so they're going to have chocolate, so I'm not going to wear it then. And I just kind of say to people, I'm like, look, there's no perfect 1 week or 2 weeks or whatever in your life. You have to, like I said, live your life. Yeah. But I also think, and I'm keen to hear what you think about this, Pam, I noticed very, very, very big fluctuations throughout my cycle. So in week four of my cycle, the way my body responds to glucose, my sleep, my energy, everything is different, dramatically different to week one of my cycle. So if, for example, I didn't know that, I've been tracking my cycle for a very long time, 2 years now. If I didn't know that and I just wore the CGM for 2 weeks, if I didn't know where I'm at in my cycle, I might not really get, yeah, the kind of the value. So do you think that it's worth for women who are menstruating, do you think it's worth them wearing it actually throughout a whole cycle and tracking it alongside that?
Absolutely. And probably more than one cycle. My medical affairs team at Lingo, a bunch of us dietitians, we are so curious about this. You would be probably, we nerd out a lot on like the menstrual cycle and glucose and substrate use, etc., because it's so dynamic, right? It definitely, like, you almost feel like, is there something different with the biosensor? Because I respond so differently, right?
Right. But it's like night and day.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And it's, I see that a lot in my female athletes, to the point where like I'm changing their fueling protocol because I know what we're doing in this week was different than what we needed last week, et cetera, right? But only with that peek behind the scenes that you get with your own data can you really kind of hack that. But I think it's very interesting to overlay where you're at on your cycle with where you're at on your glucose. And then if you want to really get into it, what is, you know, your, what does your workout look like? What does your perceived exertion look like, et cetera? And then you can map out your own plan.
Yeah. And I think, to be honest, it's something that I've really taken seriously because it impacts me a lot. And I think naturally it's encouraged me again to add in more recovery, to add in more, you know, go to bed early, you know, in the week four, as I said, if my glucose is going to be up and down and, you know, maybe I'm not going to feel great on my run and there's all these things. And if I wasn't tracking, you know, I really do think that I would just probably give myself a hard time. So like mentally you feel, you know, frustrated because you're like, why, you know, why does this suck? Why am I, you know, you lose motivation, all of that. Whereas when you can see it, it doesn't, I'm not going to lie and say it doesn't still impact my frustration and motivation. It does, but it feels more like, okay, I have a reason. I can see this. And I know that in a few days' time, everything's almost going to lift again. All the boats in my harbor are going to lift and I'm going to be fine. You know, I can kind of get through it.
Yeah. But it is like that, you know, I've had that peek behind the scenes where I'm running and it's just been a terrible run. I feel terrible. I perform terribly. And then I get back and I realize my glucose was very low and I'm like, oh, I thought I was unfit and a terrible runner, and it wasn't, right? So you have that like kind of check and it's accountability. So next time I need to fuel more appropriately, but it's nice to know like, oh, I don't have to throw in the towel. Like, it's just, you know, it's something I can navigate and something I can fix. So,
yeah. And it's very empowering, isn't it? I mean, all of this data that we now have available to us, I think it is incredibly empowering actually to say, actually, yes, I can modify. And like I said, add in, I need more recovery and rest in this week, or actually I'm feeling great and I'm going to add in, and I'm going to go, you know, add an extra couple of, miles, or add another session, or, you know, actually now I know this about my body when I eat these foods or when I do that. It's so empowering to be able to tweak and change and modify and essentially personalize in the way that maybe, you know, maybe before only, you know, elite, like you said, elite performers, athletes would have this access, and now it's available for mere mortals like me to be able to, you know, not only just improve my performance as a runner, but to just, you know, feel as though it's something that I can, you know, be proactive about. I really want to be proactive about my health, about my longevity, around my lifestyle. It's really, really important to me. You know, my grandma had type 2 diabetes, my dad had type 2 diabetes, and I know this isn't necessarily about that, but I think sometimes people just go, oh, well, this is in my family. This is just, that means that's my fate. That's what I'm, you know, it's genetics. And actually what I've learned from, you know, from reading and research is that maybe, I think it's very, very, very small, less than 10% of your kind of destiny in that sense, right, is down to genetics, and maybe 90% is lifestyle.
Oh, for sure.
So why wouldn't I? Yeah. So why wouldn't I, as, you know, in my 30s, why wouldn't I want to empower myself, you know, learn about my own body and make changes accordingly?
Yes. Yes. And I think, you know, like clinically, sometimes we call different diseases like diseases of lifestyle, right? And not all diseases fit in there, and not all, you know, conditions do, but like, If you know how your story might end, but you don't want that ending, you know, you can change it. But you have to, you know, you have to make the changes. You have to choose the different habits. You have to kind of, you know, embrace that you're going to own it.
All All right, so this is the Power Hour podcast. So Pam, I can't let you leave without telling us about your Power Hour and then maybe giving some advice for the listeners about if they want to improve their metabolic health, things they could consider in their Power Hour. So essentially, it's the first hour of the day. So when you wake up in the morning, what does your first hour typically include?
Ooh, is this a do as I say, not as I do? No, I'm just kidding. So the first hour of my day, what does it include? It really does include that hydration, right? So the first thing I do before, you know, everyone gets up in my household, I do add in hydration and then I do add in coffee because it improves performance. And I'm usually trying to time that so then I work out. But then I'm getting everyone up. I'm preparing a healthy breakfast for my kids. We're pretty high in protein in this house because it's helping them with cognition in school, trying to go lower sugar. And then I'm getting my day started. So either hitting the laptop and getting work started or going out for a run.
Okay. And I want to jump on that maybe savory breakfast option that you just mentioned, because I switched to that too, and it's a game changer. But definitely interested to hear more about. So for parents, whether their kids are young or, you know, young teens, maybe concentration, why are you prioritizing protein and opting for low sugar?
Yeah, there's some data that shows that cognition and, you know, recall is improving when we have less of a glucose dip or a glucose excursion, I should say, and then a dip. And while we have different age groups, I think this applies to everyone. And my children alone, you know, maybe yours are like this, they have a hard enough time paying attention anyway. So if I can at least give them this one tool in their toolbox and get them started correctly, you know, it's funny, I bought this really sugary cereal the other day that I won't tell you what it is because they're going to like take my dietitian license away from me. But I gave it to them. It was supposed to be for dessert. And my daughter wanted it for breakfast. And I was like, well, you're going to have some protein with that or else you're going to have to go to sleep here in about an hour. And so now she sees the cereal and she's like, can I have that before bed? Because it helps me sleep, which is not what I meant, right? But what I meant was don't have a glucose spike and then, you know, crash during the day. So what breakfast usually looks like in our house is a lot of scrambled eggs, a lot of, you know, maybe adding in some ham or another, you know, protein source to those scrambled eggs. We might have it on some whole grain toast, a lot of yogurt, a lot of parfaits, adding in some fruit for some fiber, some nutrients, etc. But what I'm trying not to do is send them out the door with just a sugar load, and then they're not going to have any protein to rely on and no amount of steady energy so they can, you know, pay attention.
Yeah, we get through a lot of eggs in this house as well. Yep. And I always say to the kids in the morning, I'm like, you are so lucky, because of course we're there preparing, you know, like you said, there's different options. Sometimes they're like, they've got blueberries, they might have their porridge, they've got eggs, we've got avocado on toast going on. It's all happening. Yes. And honestly, I think back to when I was going to school age 10, and it was literally, I don't know, it was 2 Weetabix and some cow's milk. And like you said, it was kind of, you know, an orange juice. This is the thing. We don't have any sugary juices in the house. We don't have fruit juices. We just, you know, I don't know, maybe some people might think that's a little bit extreme, but from my perspective, I'm like, look, there's enough fruits, there's enough sugar, they probably get enough sugar from their diet, just the foods they eat, let alone the juice. So we don't have any juice, but I feel like that was probably the biggest thing. Like, if I could say to anyone, and again, never tell parents what to do, but like giving, like starting your day with a glass full of like liquid sugar, if you're, you know, having a processed, I don't know, orange juice, apple juice, whatever, concentrated, it's probably like, arguably, like you said, regardless of what you're eating, it's just going to send your glucose up, get this burst of energy, and then crash like an hour later just when they're arriving in school.
Yes, yes. If we have juice, it's 100% fruit juice, but it's very diluted. So we do some juice. I think for my kids, it just helps them drink more water. And, you know, it's funny. My husband grew up on orange juice, so he loves orange juice. And he had a glass the other day. I was like, do you know what that's doing to you? And he's like, no.
Yes, leave me.
He's like, no, what are you talking about, right? So we have this perception of orange juice and other things being really healthy, right? And this is where it comes into personalized nutrition, that when you see behind the scenes, you're like, oh, maybe that's not the best choice for me, right? So like, but we, again, I have this as a dietitian. I just think people know how to prepare meals and they can follow a meal plan and they know, you know, this or that. And they're like, no. Like, help me understand. No. Tell me more, right? Yeah, so we write everything in lingo to think through, how do we help people build a better relationship with food? How do we help people build a better relationship with health and make it make it easy on me. Make it sustainable. Help me make these small changes, like putting down the orange juice or adding in water to that, if you have to buy it, you know, to make real life happen, but also metabolic health happen.
Yes. And that word, you know, that's the key, isn't it? Small changes, because as I've said many times, I like to live my life, you know, like I said, I might sound extreme with the fruit juice for the kids, but I like to live my life. And to be honest, when we go out of the house, like we go on holiday or we go, you know, that's one of the things I think the kids love the most, is they're like, oh my gosh, when we get to the hotel, we can have any breakfast we want. And I'm like, sure, because it's a week, you know, and I think that's it, isn't it? What we do sometimes, it doesn't matter. You know, sometimes having, like I said, the wine, the ice cream, the orange juice, sometimes I think what we do most of the time is what matters.
Yes.
And I think, you know, when it comes to daily habits, when it comes to learning knowledge about our bodies and ourselves, what we do sometimes, fine. But what we do every day or most days is going to have the biggest impact over time.
Yes. So. And I love that mindset.
Pam, thank you so much for joining today. I feel like both of us could have talked for another hour.
Yes, for sure.
I really love spending time with you. We did a workshop together in the UK and it was fantastic. And I knew this episode would be brilliant. So thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for letting me be a guest. It was a good time.
As always, if you enjoyed this episode, if you know someone who would benefit from hearing this, if you've been looking at Lingo, I'm sure you've probably seen it online, then, you know, share this episode with others. It's a really useful resource for people to understand more about CGMs and about metabolic health. And I'll be back next week with another episode. See ya. Thanks, Pam.
Thank you.